All right, now back with us here on Thursday Night Tailgate is former Steelers linebacker Robin Cole. And boy, did I love watching 56 play. Let me remind you about Robin's background. He is from Los Angeles, California, played his college ball at the University of New Mexico, where he was named an All-Western Athletic Conference player in 1975 and 76. He left New Mexico as their all-time leader in tackles, and he set the single-season high for sacks with 17 back in 1975. He was the only linebacker ever drafted in the first round by Chuck Knoll. He was the 21st overall selection in 1977. Played in the NFL from 77 to 1988. All but his last season was with the Steelers. He played that final season with the Jets. Selected to the Pro Bowl in 1984, he led the Steelers in tackles, plus had a sack in their Super Bowl 14 win over his hometown Rams. And his birthday is coming up next Tuesday, September the 11th. And we're very excited that he is back with us again tonight here on the show. Happy birthday, Robin. Thanks for coming back.
Welcome back, Robin.
Hey, brothers, how are you?
Doing great.
We're fantastic. How are you doing? Catch us up. What's going on with you, Robin?
I'm doing tremendous. A little bit of everything. Everything's going on. It just get, for some reason, it goes fast. You know, the older I get, it just seems like the faster it goes. You know, a guy told me a long time ago, he says, it's like a roll of toilet paper. He says, the closer you get to the end, the faster it rolls. And I tell you what, I can't slow the days down. I mean, they're just going. And let me, before we get started here, let me tell you, we talked about 17 sacks at the University of New Mexico. It was 19 sacks.
19 sacks.
And in the Super Bowl, it was two sacks in the Super Bowl. Super Bowl 14.
Wow. Okay.
So to the stats, I try to correct the stats as I go. But really, it doesn't make any difference with me. I mean, I take it any way I can get it. I'm just glad to be around and be able to talk to you guys, get on the show and have some fun here every once in a while. I enjoy the heck out of it. You guys are doing a tremendous job. Keep up the good work.
We appreciate you, Robin. So I want to start by getting your thoughts on the Steelers' defense, particularly the linebackers, Robin. They have a big gap to fill after losing Ryan Shazier last year. And now they've flip-flopped T.J. Watt and Bud Dupree to opposite ends of the defensive line. So curious to get your thoughts. What do you think about the Steelers' defense this season, particularly what are you expecting from their linebackers?
Well, I mean, I really expect the defense to be eventually it'll get a little balanced. We are missing Ryan Shazier. We're really missing a prime Pro Bowler, and you know, he was on track to just have a phenomenal career throughout his time. They're moving guys around, and part of the reason is guys, they feel a little bit more comfortable in the positions that they moved them back to, because that's the size they normally played on. I remember when I was a linebacker, I played the outside left linebacker most of my college career. And then when I came to the pros, I played the right linebacking spot. And that was one of my weak spots, because I wasn't left-handed, I was right-handed. But, you know, we make adjustments. As football players, you make adjustments. I mean, golly, I went from the outside linebacking position to the middle linebacking position and went to the Pro Bowl. Back in the early years, the coaches used to think that I should have been a middle linebacker all the time. Well, we make adjustments. When you get out on the football field, you start practicing, you learn how to play the whole game. Back in our days, that's what we learned how to do. We learned how to play special teams. We learned how to play offense. We learned how to play defense. And sometimes we'd have to make adjustments for the team. Those were the kind of players we were back in those days. They find the spot for you. You sometimes have to make adjustments to make the team better. And I think what it's doing is going to make the team better in the long run. Right now, it looks kind of like guys may be a little bit uncomfortable with it, especially fans, because they're used to seeing us play one side or the other, or they're used to seeing the guys playing one side or the other. But the linebackers, golly, in Pittsburgh, you know that they will. That position is going to always be a position that's going to be pulled together. Guys are going to learn how to play together. They're going to learn how to play with their defensive line. They're going to learn how to play with their secondary. And that's always, as far as Pittsburgh is concerned, that's always a position that's going to be a strong point.
So to the point you were making a moment ago, Robin, how difficult is it to switch from position to position, left to right, middle linebacker, inside linebacker? How hard is that adjustment to make?
It's a pretty tough adjustment to make. Some guys can make those adjustments, and some guys haven't been able to do that. And some guys can go from very few guys can go from the outside to the inside linebacking position, and then there, you know, it's a few guys that can go from the inside to the outside position. Myself, I remember Dennis Winston, who was an inside linebacker, and in 1979, he had to go from the middle linebacking position to the outside linebacking position in the playoffs, and then also in the Super Bowl, in which we won, because Jack Ham had gone down. So some guys can make those adjustments. Some guys can't make those adjustments. It's just you know, the way their bodies are, the way they normally play. You know, you take an inside guy and move him to the outside, he's still kind of playing like he's on the inside, and then sometimes don't realize that you're the last guy when that team is running that sweep or running that outside play, and you cannot make an inside move. You have to keep yourself outside to corner that running back and turn that play back inside. It takes a little while to make that adjustment while you're on the football field. And at the same time, you're thinking about the position that you're playing and what your job is based on what they're doing to you offensively. So, you know, it takes a lot of practice. It takes a lot of work to think about it. Some guys can make those adjustments rather quickly, but some guys can't. It's just and then some guys can make adjustment, which I had to do. I had to go a couple of games when all the defensive ends got hurt. I had to go from the outside linebacker position to a defensive end. I had a down lineman at 220 pounds. Okay, I had to do that a couple of games because everybody got hurt. I remember John Banachek got hurt, and L.C. Greenwood got hurt, and I'm there playing in 1983. I'm playing against a Pro Bowler, for the New York Jets, and I'm playing defensive end. But I played the position in college, and I understood the position, and I understood that I was going to be quicker than any of these guys because they just, you know, may not be able to keep up with me, and I just wreaked havoc that game against one of the top offensive tackles in the National Football League back then. And so you just, you know, those adjustments have to be made. And that's why I like football players. When you play defense, I like you to learn more than one position. Learn how to play a defensive end position. Learn how to be a down lineman. Learn how to stand up and run from a two-point stance to a four-point stance and sometimes a three-point stance or whatever it was. I mean, in the day, we had to learn how to play football because you never knew when you may be needed someplace else. And that's why, you know, some guys, you know, it's different. That's some guys are drafted high because of the more they can do. Chuck Noll used to say it was job security. So, you know, back in the day, we were interested in more job security. So the more you can do, more positions you can play, the greater your opportunity was to be with that team for an extended period of time. So it was always good.
And Robin, you mentioned L.C. Greenwood a moment ago, and we had the privilege of getting to know LC a little bit before we abruptly lost him. He was very near and dear to us, and Bob and I still can't understand how he's not in the in the Hall of Fame. But give us your memories. What was it like being a teammate with LC Greenwood?
Oh, LC was just a great guy all around. LC took me under his wing, and that is as a teammate. He took me under his wing to start teaching me the Pittsburgh area and how to deal with and how to meet people and how to go around the town and just extend yourself to people. LC was a guy that taught me how to do that. As a football player, we became roommates after Dwight White retired, or for his last year with the team, and we became roommates, and we even worked together in the off season, and just watching him play and watching. And him teaching me because, you know, at that time, he was teaching me a little bit about the defensive end position when everybody would go down. And I would have to always prepare myself for that. But L.C. Greenwood was a guy that was a giver in the community. He helped a lot in the community. As a football player, he was still that giver. He understood he understood his position, but he also understood what linebackers were doing. He worked real well with Jack Ham. These guys used to work together. I used to get you know, go to the other side of the field, say, what are you guys doing over here that we need to do on the other side of the field? Because it was myself, Dwight White, and John Banaszak playing on the other side, and we were just we had to solidify that side as well as they did, as those all pro-lers and shit. All three of those guys should be in the Hall of Fame. LC, you know, Joe and Jack Ham is, but LC Greenwood is not in there. We still don't understand why not, and why he hasn't been there. But he for now he wouldn't be interested in being there at all. But LC was just a great guy, a great player, one of the best there was at the defensive end position for all the years he played. 6-year Pro Bowler, and he was one of the top players in the league for a lot of years, and still today, you know, when I got him on my wall, I keep him there, and I think about him quite often. What a great guy, what a great individual he was, and he was always pleasing to anybody that he met.
5 questions for Robin.
It's always great to have you on, Robin, and you're kind of a theme going through whenever we talk to you in those Steeler teams is the versatility and just the overall athleticism on a part of these guys. And when you were growing up, Robin, in the 60s, I was just wondering, we talked to so many guys who say they did so many different sports, which made them better football players. Tell me about your upbringing as far as what you did to make you a good football player. Was it always all about football with you?
No. I started off as a baseball player. And I played baseball all the way up to the 10th grade. It was the 11th grade when I started 11th grade when I decided that I was going to play football full time, because I started to throw my shoulder out for whatever reason that was. And I was told that I was going through a growth spurt. And along with their growth spurt, I threw the ball very hard. And then the other side of it was the weightlifting. I started to get into weightlifting a whole lot, and that was all happening at the same time. But I was a baseball player, shucks. I was at playing baseball. I was batting. I hardly struck out when I got between the 9th and 10th grade. I don't recall getting struck out at all.
Boy.
I used to put the ball up against the wall often. And I loved it. And I thought that was going to be the opportunity for me to go to college. But when I started having the challenge with my throwing arm, I said, I think I better continue to play football. And I had to choose at that time which sport that I would play. And I chose football. But that wasn't the only sport, because when I started playing football, I had a wrestling coach that was also a PE teacher that shared with me. I can remember him coming to me I was in class, and he said, hey, you want to be a better football player? I said, yeah, I want to be a better football player. I said, I would like to maybe get an opportunity to go to college. And he said, come to wrestling practice at the end of the day, and I want you to start wrestling. I said, wrestling? Me? I said, I don't wrestle, coach. I mean, I may do something else. But he said, come to the wrestling practice, and I guarantee you, if you learn how to wrestle, it'll make you a better football player. And I said, you sure? He said, I guarantee it. And I started wrestling. And I wrestled 11th and 12th grade, and I tell you what, I learned so much about leverage when I wrestled. It was unbelievable. And then after wrestling, when I entered my first year at the University of New Mexico, I used to snoop around because I was a karate buff. I was a Bruce Lee guy. I loved it. Loved Bruce Lee. And I hadn't ever taken any karate. And he told me, as a physical education major going in my freshman year, he caught me snooping around, and I snooped around a couple of times. And watching them, their classes. And I remember sticking my head in the room, and when I stuck my head in the room, I looked around. I said, "Wally, where's the instructor?" And he was standing by the wall, and he caught me and he grabbed me. He said, "Come on in the classroom." And he said the same thing my wrestling coach said. He said, "If you start taking my class and you start learning karate, it's going to make you a better football player." And both of those guys were right. Those were the sports that I pursued outside of football after that. continued to learn how to wrestle, and I wrestled around. I didn't wrestle in college, but I wrestled in high school, and then I started taking karate classes and learning a little bit judo and learning balance. And I tell you what, those two guys helped me go from where I was to being a first-round draft pick in 1977.
Robin, I read that you were a Raiders fan, speaking of Compton, a Raiders fan growing up. And Steelers and Raiders, pretty huge rivals during the decade of the 70s. So when the Steelers drafted you, were you like, really, the Steelers? They got to be like the arch rival of the Raiders at that point. Were you happy to be a Steeler, or were you, you know, kind of going like a kid that grew up, now you're going to play for your arch rival?
Well, I back in the day when I was in college, we didn't get the opportunity to see many professional games. We did. We would always see, we would see the Dallas Cowboys and we'd see the Denver Broncos play. And if they were playing any of those other teams, then we would, you know, we'd be able to get we'd have an opportunity to see those teams play. Coming up as a high school player, I was a Raiders fan. And because it was a California team, and I chose the Raiders, the Los Angeles Rams. We never saw them on television because when they played home games, for sure, it was never, the Coliseum was never sold out. So you never got the games on television. So I didn't really get to know those guys. The team that I got to know was the Oakland Raiders because their games were on television and we were able to see them. So I got to know some of those players. And, I was a big fan. It got me in so much trouble, I tell you, when I got drafted. I get drafted in 1977. Now, that was the year that Chuck Noll was having challenges. They were in court with Al Davis. They were talking about that. Remember the title, The Criminal Element?
Okay. Uh-huh.
That's when he changed the rules. That's what Mel Blunt did. You know, Mel Blunt was going through a contract negotiation, and the Raiders were saying Mel Blunt was a dirty player, and the Steelers on our side were saying, All the Raiders were dirty players. Hey, which they were. There was a little bit of that going on with all of them. And I get drafted that year, and I'm at the University of New Mexico in my dormitory room. Okay. By then it was student housing. But in my student housing, and after the draft, I'm doing an interview in Pittsburgh. And I have no idea who I'm doing an interview with, some of the names that were there, and I'm admiring Copes of the day, and all those people were in a room and they're asking me these questions. And he said, did you have a favorite team? Yeah, I had a favorite team. Well, who's your favorite team? I said, well, the Oakland Raiders were one of my favorite teams. And I heard a guy said, Oakland Raiders. And I said, who the heck is that? This guy, really, he sounds a little like Howard Cosell, but his pitch was just very higher than his. And it was Myron Cole. And they said, well, who was your players? And I said, oh, I liked, that's not the only team that I like as far as players are concerned. But I mean, I like the way this style of play. Okay. I remember it was time for me to come to Pittsburgh to report for camp. All the rookies, reported for the early camp, and we would come back later. But like the early camps that they have now, OTAs, whatever they call them today. But, I reported and I walk in. I'm all excited about being in Pittsburgh, and I walk up to the receptionist and she looks at me and I introduce myself all excited. And she says, I said, hi, I'm Robin Cole. And she looked at me and said, oh, you're the guy. He said, you're the one that's doing all that talking. He said, what are you talking about? Doing all that talking. What talk are you talking about? She said, wait a minute. Oh, let me see if I can find a newspaper. She found a newspaper and brought me back the newspaper. It was like the headlines. It had Jack Cato's picture. It had Gene Atkinson's picture. And Chuck was, you know, he's in court with these people and fighting and going on. And I have no idea. I'm out in New Mexico. I might as well have been in Brazil. I didn't have no idea what was going on here. We weren't getting any news reports about what was going on in the National Football League and what teams were arguing about and fighting about, but it was in the middle of that. And I think Chuck Noll was still mad at me. He stayed mad at me for a lot of years.
No doubt.
Because of that, you know? Because I used to walk around and wonder, it's like Chuck Stewart got something of something he's thinking, something's going on. And I can't figure it out, okay? But we never talked about it at all afterwards, at all. And I said, well, we never got the opportunity to talk about that. But that was, yeah, it was. And that, and they and the way they wrote that, the headline says, Atkinson Tatum codes heroes. And
wow.
Never, in fact, I did not read that clipping until I retired. I didn't even want to read
it. Wow.
And when I read it, it was like, wow, I didn't say that. That's not what I meant. That's not. So, yeah.
Robin,
before
we let you go, you do a lot of work now with your foundation, the Obadiah Cole Foundation for prostate cancer. Let our listeners know about the great stuff you're doing.
Started that back in 2006, and for prostate cancer awareness. After I was diagnosed with prostate cancer, I needed to do something. I felt I needed to do something because nobody was talking about it. I had heard not much about it at all. I knew my brother was diagnosed with prostate cancer, and I had three brothers that were diagnosed with prostate cancer before I was. And so I knew that they were getting the challenges there, but getting the information out was like a secret, and something needed to be done. And because of that, myself and two other gentlemen started a foundation to bring awareness and to educate people about prostate cancer. And we've been doing it ever since. Sometimes it seems like we still don't have enough resources out there to really get the word across, because it needs to be out in front of men all the time. I have two brothers that passed away because of prostate cancer. My father passed away because of prostate cancer. And all seven of my brothers, all of us ended up with prostate cancer. So if you have family history, you want to make sure that you're getting checked. You want to stay on top of this, because it's a silent killer, and it can take your life. But if you get detected, or you find out early enough, you can be around a long time. Early detection is what saved my life, and early detection is the key for prostate cancer, just like it is for breast cancer. And so I go around and I try to make my way, get the opportunity every once in a while to get out here and share about prostate cancer. And at the same time, maybe one day we'll find out this disease called cancer. We just don't have the answers yet, but maybe one day we will. But until we find the answers, we have to make sure that men and women both understand that prostate cancer is something that doesn't have to take your life. You can live a long life with prostate cancer, but if you don't find out until late, golly, what happened to my brothers can also happen to your dad, your brothers, and your close relatives. We need to continue to get the message out there and make a difference.
Well, Robin, we can't thank you enough for taking time out of your night to come back and be a part of the show and to share your stories, your insights, and the great work that you're doing for prostate cancer. Thank you so much for your time tonight. We look forward to hopefully getting the opportunity to have you back on the show again real soon.
Sounds good, guys. I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Take care, Robin.
Thank you. Yeah, okay.
That is former Steelers Pro Bowl linebacker Robin Cole. We've got our next guest, Jim Everett, hanging on the line. We're going to get to Jim on the other side of this quick station break.